Good morning, Graham. How are you?
Good.
What a week last week was in terms of seismic developments politically, and a bit of a knife edge on election night itself, was it not?
It's extraordinary the way the journalists almost wet themselves when it comes to sacking or getting rid of a politician.
It is, isn't it? And of course, some of the timing was, as it were, playing into that potential drama, wasn't it? Mal, can you hear me? Good morning. Good morning, Mal. Can you hear me?
Morning. Yes, I can.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. It was, my God, it was a long night, was it not?
It was. We announced that this talking about last week's election, I'm presuming.
Yes, indeed.
It's the West Hill was the last ward to announce at 10 to 6 in the morning.
That's very very unusual for the mega efficient Wandsworth polling machine, but it was up to
Absolutely
the
not their
wire like
fault.
so many, wasn't it?
No, it remained mega efficient. It's just we had 15 candidates. And in the old days, if I can put it like that, the majority of polling of ballot papers would be three for one of the parties, your favourite party, so three Labour or three Conservative, mostly in Wandsworth, and then three Lib Dems occasionally. So counting it was relatively straightforward. Most of the ballots you just put in the relevant pile, the Labour and the Tory one. Then there'd be a few cross change ones. People who only voted once. Or people who cross-voted because they knew the candidates, but it was a relatively straightforward issue. This time it was vastly more complicated because, as it happened, 77% of people who voted in the ward voted for me, and then apart from the ones who only voted for me, there was every combination you could imagine. I saw me and two Reform, me and two Greens, me and two Tory, me and two Labour, whatever it was, and then a lot. Quite a few who are voting three different ways. So you weren't able to just pile most of the papers up and then deal with the other ones. It was a vastly more complicated issue. Now, they had a new system which they introduced last time, which has worked well, but it was just ploughing through all of these so many papers that didn't fit the three party ones. Now, of course, quite a few in all wards were three parties and they could be counted. But because, the 15 candidates in West Hill for the first time, ever in some wards there were 60. It's a complicated job, and the counting staff were really extremely efficient.
Well, it's very impressive, but also almost unique across the land, isn't it?
Yeah, I
This
mean
is a situation. Oh.
West Hill is fascinating. We produced this little single little ward in the middle of London, produced the single biggest vote of the night across London. The
Yeah.
only ward in London which is split three ways politically, because Angela Ireland and Daniel Hossain, Labour and Conservative respectively, held the other two seats, were re-elected for the other two seats, and of course the person who's ended up with the balance of power in Wandsworth. So all of that for one little ward is really quite impressive.
Well, it's just a great sort of a great deal about your implicit editorial balance that people see things from a variety of angles and get on pretty well as a sort of micro society. Graham, you wanted to nip in.
Well, congratulations. It's amazing.
Thank you. I mean,
Why is
I
it
was
so, why is it so unique?
Well, it's either unique or it isn't, isn't it? In what sense do you mean?
Well, in the sense of you being so popular.
I mean, I just think by accident I seem to have hit on a formula that works. So, I mean, the thing that always keeps coming back to me is we don't just see you at elections, and people do get a. I put out so between 8,000 and 9,000 emails every month to people in the ward, so that's probably hitting about 70% of the voting population among several others who aren't on the register who get it. And I do, most days I'm out knocking on doors and chatting to people about things. And of course now I've been around for 32 years. I pretty much know how to get most issues dealt with quite efficiently. I know where to go in the council and what buttons to press. So there's quite a lot of people who've raised issues with me and had a positive outcome. But it's interesting also, there's a point where being independent becomes a huge advantage, because up to a certain point, if you haven't got, if people don't know who you are, then they're likely to vote for their preferred political party. But at a particular tipping point where sufficient people actually know who you are and have been in contact, and obviously have to sort of vaguely like you in the course of that as well. But then suddenly being independent becomes a huge advantage, because when people have three votes, as they did in my ward, my ward was a three-member ward, the Conservatives tend to think, oh, we'll vote for Malcolm, we'll still vote two Tories, so we don't feel we're being disloyal. And Labour can do the same. They can vote for two of the Labour candidates and me if they're that way inclined. And so at that point, the way we do the election at the moment starts to work very much in an independent advantage. I think it's practically impossible to believe, even if I was doing exactly the same with casework and everything and talking to people, but if I had a party label, there would be a considerable number of people who just wouldn't countenance voting for me because of the party label. So it's a combination of things, but it was very interesting across London. I was looking at it, of the top 30 votes that were the number of votes, 25 of them were Conservatives, 4 of them were independents, and only one at number 30 was Labour. There's a super safe ward in Bromley for the Tories, which picked up numbers 2, 3, and 4 in the total number of votes. So it looks rather as if, you know, there are the Tories tend to, you know, on the balance of those just those seats, have sort of big majorities, which is a bit of a waste in first past the post. You ideally want your vote spread round, so the same number of votes get you a greater number of seats. Whereas it seems, as things stand at the moment in the capital, as if Labour probably are now on rather smaller majorities, which would fit with the general trend that Labour had a pretty bad night in London, not as disastrous as some thought. And the Tories, actually, although they lost seats in London, I think actually will feel it was much better than they feared in London.
Yeah, it was
In
in
other
many.
words, you get voted in because you do your job.
Well, I think it could be about as simple as that,
How refreshing. But with that in mind, I suppose the fact that where people were seen to fall down, I suppose be a mite cynical or inured in some way, at the times they were and are a changing. Now, there's been this phenomenon across town of no overall control. I think Lambeth, Southwark, if I remember rightly, please correct me. And of course, the situation in Wandsworth that I stayed up and heard you talking to my colleague Jason Rosam, Mal, and there was this delicate negotiation that was mooted over the weekend. How did that go? And what? How do you pitch a conversation like this? Presumably between people who are sort of old friends, but at the same time, it's a delicate situation, isn't it?
It's. I mean, it's not a situation that I. It's the sort of thing that in the back of your mind you kind of think might happen. But statistically, for me to be important, it had to be specifically 29 Conservative, 28 Labour, and me. On any other combination, either the Conservatives would have an overall majority, or Labour would be able to use the casting vote of the mayor to preserve it. So if it had been 29, 28 in Labour's favour, even if I supported the Conservative candidate from there, it will be a tie in the outgoing mayor, who didn't stand for election. We'd have this peculiar situation that an unelected person would decide who ran Wandsworth for the next, potentially for the next 4 years. So the only way the vote could fall where my vote mattered was if it was 29 Conservative and 28 Labour. And I 4 years ago, I did an interview with On London. And I went back and looked at it when the issue came up, what if it's the other way around? What if it's the Tories who end up with 28 as the outgoer, as the existing council, and 29? And I said, it'd be practically impossible to imagine I could support the Conservatives in that situation because of exactly what I said. Firstly, the decision would be then rest with an unelected person. And then, because Les MacDonald, the outgoing mayor there, similarly didn't re-stand for election. And then, secondly, every single vote, for as long as the arrangement decided, I would decide whether the vote went through or not, because if I voted in favour of the Labour motion in that situation, then the mayor's casting vote would carry the day for Labour. If I didn't vote for the Labour proposal, then the Tories were defeated in the chamber. And it's really so undemocratic to imagine that a council should be chosen by someone who wasn't elected, and then every vote should be in the power of one of the 58 councillors who just happened to find themselves that. It was so almost bizarre to think that that was possible. But pretty early on, I thought that, because the way it works is that the annual council meeting in a couple of weeks' time, the first vote will be for the new mayor, and Labour and Conservative will each put a candidate up. That doesn't usually happen. It's usually a single candidate agreed between the parties. But on this occasion, I've no doubt each of them will put a mayoral candidate up. And the first vote is then.
They've got to persuade someone to do it
Probably
though.
no.
Got to find someone who agrees to do it first, Malcolm.
Well, I guess this will probably do that.
I mean,
Lasso them and detain them until due process is complete.
and can I just remind you, forget your podcast last year. What did I say to you on this podcast just before the election?
I don't know. What did you say to us on this podcast just before the election?
Well, I said
I hear you
exactly.
saying
I asked
slightly
Malcolm
tongue
what
in
he.
cheek.
Well, not so tongue in cheek. Don't
Well,
forget,
about
I'd
to
been out.
turn out, haven't you?
No, I'd been out on the doorstep in a lot of places, so I was fairly sure it was going to be very, very close. And in fact, I sent myself a prediction on Monday the 4th that said 28, 29, and 1. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Did you put money on this?
No, because I don't think
I don't think you're allowed to.
I
Oh.
think I think personally I think that would be completely improper. I mean, I have got I think
This
it
is
would be like,
trellis.
well,
Yeah.
it would be like insider trading for me to
It would a bit, wouldn't it?
put money on this, because I did have quite a substantial amount of prior knowledge, which is why I was teasing Malcolm. I'm still disappointed that his price isn't that he becomes the leader, because I was looking forward to joining Malcolm's cabinet, as you'll also remember. That was very tongue in cheek, clearly. But I did think there was quite a strong possibility that it could go to 28, 29, and 1. I really did. So there.
As we were saying earlier, if the Labour had been 29, though, my position would have been irrelevant. It had
Oh,
to be
never, Mel, I think
specifically
that.
Tory 29, which is just, just. I mean, as you know, the closest vote was 15 votes, I think. If 15
St.
votes had gone
Mary's.
the other way,
Yeah,
yeah.
St. Mary's.
If
I mean,
15 votes had gone the other way, Labour would be running the council.
essentially, Simon lost it by 15 votes rather than the Tories won it, because, that was a Labour seat. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary night. I've no idea what I said to Jason, but it was about 6:15 in the morning. I'd be very surprised if I said anything coherent.
Well, I
Oh, is
think it
this
was.
River? You spoke to Riverside at quarter past
Yes,
six. Yeah. They wanted to talk to me, but I kind of thought it was probably best if I didn't have a chat with them.
I think it was fairly widely circulated. It was a superb piece of work, Mel, as indeed was the whole governance of the night. But what's
You
the,
know
I
it. You know
mean.
it's pretty. You know it's pretty similar in Barnet, except it's a Green councillor. Have you looked at any of the other results? Barnet has got 63 councillors, so you would have thought it would stop the situation that we've got, because obviously we've got an even number. But there's actually 31 Conservatives, 31 Labour, and one Green. That is the Barnet result.
Yeah, and it is similar in the sense that if the Green abstains, then Labour will retain the council on the mayor's casting vote.
Yes.
So the Greens have to actively support the Conservatives in order for control to go to the Conservatives. But that's not th there's one of the other boroughs where it does look like Enfield, I think, where it does look possible that a Conservative Green coalition will form to take control from Labour. That was another one of the London boroughs where the Conservatives did relatively well and took quite a few seats from Labour. So although
These are
the
traditional Tory heartlands, isn't it, you've been describing there? I
yeah,
mean,
yes,
not so much
indeed.
Barnet anymore, but yeah.
Yeah. Enfield
Barnett
was
and
famous
Enfield,
through the helm of Michael Portillo's group.
they were both Tory for a long time, Barnett
They
and
were.
Enfield. Yeah.
They were.
Well, that, yes, Finchley was very famously conservative for a long time. I can't quite
It
remember who
certainly
councillor.
was.
Thatchland.
Who's that woman who used to represent Finchley? I can't
Well, she
remember
was
her
known for
name.
many years by her predecessor as That Woman, wasn't she? And I think she could have changed the name by deed poll quite effectively.
I think she could have done. And just down the road from us in Wandsworth, of course, another That Woman used to represent the ward next door to Malcolm's, Merton, sorry, Wimbledon Park. That woman being Theresa May.
It
And
was
where of course the Conservatives also used to run Merton for a long time, but was successfully retained by Labour, as I also predicted. A lot of people were saying, "Oh, it's a big threat from the Liberal Democrats," but I thought it was really quite a stretch for them to win because they had to take seats not only off Labour, but they had to take almost every single con well, they would have had to have taken every single Conservative seat, which they didn't. And then they would also would have had to have dislodged, talking about independence as Malcolm is. There are two Merton Park independents, and there have been Merton Park independents in that ward for, well, Malcolm may know when, but they've certainly been there since
decades, isn't it?
2002, I would say, possibly longer, so at least 20 years, longer than Malcolm. And I thought the chances of the Liberal Democrats dislodging them was very slim to none,
They're a sort of dynasty, really, aren't they now,
and
almost?
they
Yeah.
well, they are actually, because they have changed personnel, but they are still the Merton Park independents, and they didn't manage to defeat all the Tories. They didn't manage to get rid of the Merton Park independents, and then they tried to win some seats off Labour in the Mitcham and Morden half of Merton, and they failed, apart from dislodging a Tory in Cannon Hill, but they didn't get rid of any of the Labour councillors, nor did the Greens. And then Labour won back a seat that had gone to Independent in 22, won back a seat that had gone to the Tories in 22 by 5 votes. And then they also won a seat off the Liberal Democrats themselves. So Labour has actually increased its majority in Merton rather than the other way around. And the Liberal Democrats fell massively short. So they've still got Conservatives, Liberal Democrats, Independents, and Labour. No Greens, though. So Merton has still got more of a mix than Wandsworth has, but the Labour majority has increased, which I thought was interesting because it shows, that Labour was quite strong, and the Liberal Democrats, although they've consolidated in the three councils that they had, when I say consolidated, there is nobody else who is a councillor now in Richmond. Every single councillor in Richmond is now a Liberal Democrat, which is a clean sweep right next door to Wandsworth, which is quite interesting. But they didn't really win anything else. They just held the three councils they've got and consolidated there, and that was it. So I don't know whether that's a good result to massively increase the number of councillors in three councils that you've got, but not win any more. I think that's probably not a good night for the Liberal Democrats. I'm not saying it was a good night for Labour because it wasn't, because
I
it
think,
wasn't.
yeah,
I
I
mean,
think it was said that
something.
Ned Davey was thinking about making an appearance in Merton, and then it rapidly became obvious that it wasn't going to be necessary.
Incidentally, the Merton Park Independents were first elected in 1990, and have
Oh, thank
been
you.
and
People
been
might think
elected every.
1890, actually, mightn't they? Wouldn't they? Because I mean,
but
No,
Sutton was
rather
a
than a penny farthing.
Sutton Council was extraordinary. The Conservatives had sort of been not quite nip and tuck with the Lib Dems. There was a very
Yeah,
worse Lib Dem as well
wiped
somewhere.
out. They've
Yeah,
gone.
but yeah, the Lib Dems won 22 seats on the night. So there's now the official opposition is Reform UK, because Reform UK
Two.
won two seats,
And Labour
and
won one.
yeah, Labour, and there's an independent only won one. So Reform
Yeah.
UK with two councillors, now the official opposition on Sutton Council. Richmond was more predictable because the five Greens who had held seats had done so because of an electoral pact between the Lib Dems and the Greens, which
Yeah.
meant Lib Dems had not stood against them in the last election, 2022, on the understanding that the Greens wouldn't stand against the Lib Dems in a number of other wards, and that led to the effective wipeout of the Tories last time. One of them survived the election, but didn't survive the Reaper terribly long. So it was peculiar circumstances that there were Greens in Richmond, but I've never been convinced that having one party states ultimately works terribly well, because
No.
somebody's got to oppose, and that opposition emerges from within a group, and that can be actually a lot more complicated. If you know who the opposition are, because they wore a different coloured rosette at the election, they sit opposite you in the chamber. There's a kind of cleanliness about that. You know where you are. If you're not quite sure which of your enemies are going to be, because they could be sitting at any point behind you or next to you or whatever, it can be a little bit more complicated.
And in case of a health and safety, in case of an electrical failure in the town hall meeting, all those beards and sandals colliding, it reminds me of the beggar, it's concerning, isn't it?
I think Mrs. Trella should have words.
I was once at a matinee screening of the second Marigold Hotel. It was wonderful, but I found
Oh.
myself trying to catch 40 winks before the weekend show, but again the lights failed, and it was Zimmer frames and teeth in all directions, basically carnage. Anyway, I digress.
Yes, I think
But
that's
democracy in action,
very cruel and unkind to suggest that the Liberal Democrats are not as
including
good.
mine, I hasten to add. Yes,
Beards and sandals. I think they have moved on slightly since then. Although I have been to meetings with Paul Kohler, who's the MP, the Liberal Democrat MP for Wimbledon, elected
Proud
in.
possessor of several sets.
Well, no, he hasn't, but he has got some very strange dress habits. He quite often turns up at things and wears odd socks and stuff like that, which I find a bit peculiar.
I once had a gig in Brighton once, and I was found at a local councillor then, if I remember rightly, smoking a briar pipe, reading the Evening Argus, and then Laura Ashley Flock. I think he was a retired colonel, if I remember rightly.
I mean, I've never seen Paul Kohler in a frock, but
No, no.
he did used to run a burlesque bar. I will
Really?
leave that there. He did.
Estimable tradition, but obviously won't be combining the two
No, he didn't.
enterprises.
Well, I never saw him wearing burlesque, no.
Well, the seams must chafe in these long meetings, I'm sure. Anyway, always have a lawyer present.
Going back to Wandsworth, yes,
Yes.
Merton is running everything. Sorry, Malcolm is running everything at the moment. Until the
Well, not
mayor
at the
making.
moment.
Until the
That's at the
mayor making.
moment. It's the moment.
How seismic is the intray, Mal? Obviously, in practical terms, things are a little bit on hold. But could you give us a flavour of how those conversations went over the weekend?
Well, actually, most folk out there may have noticed that all this is going on. And a few of the more interesting ones, I did send an email around everyone in the ward to explain my position on things, because understandably, those who are Labour supporters but have voted for me are uncomfortable with the decision that I've taken, and that's entirely. Yeah, I'm very grateful actually to them who did take the trouble to write to me and say they disagreed with
No,
the
constructive
decision.
criticism is always
Yeah,
useful.
because that feedback, and it was very respectful. It was very and yeah, it was good. I was grateful for them for taking the trouble for that. And I absolutely understand why they're disappointing. I'd say it hasn't been terribly many. Most people have said either, good, you're supporting the Tories, or more, don't really envy the position you're in, but we'll trust you to take your own decision. So the because it's weird with me, I actually talk to fewer residents during the election campaign than I do normally, because so much of my time is spent organising the logistics of getting the leaflets out to the people who are going to deliver them, and making sure that I'm on top of that, which is a huge task. I mean, one of the very few things that I miss from being a party politician is that the parties have got groups of people, armies of people, it used to be, who would deal with all that for you. You didn't need to bother about getting your own, you just went in, gave them a couple of stories and a photograph, and then your central office would get all of the leaflets printed. They'd get them all delivered for you, and you, as the candidate, wouldn't have to do all that for yourself. With
I've
it
been a
just being,
canvasser once or twice, and it's run like a military operation, really extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a team like I've got a wonderful agent, Peter West, who's been very helpful right the way through. But the writing the leaflet, getting it printed, so you're going to the printers, getting the artwork done by the printer, getting it printed, collecting it, batching it up into the different piles for the different deliverers, getting it to them. Is that in itself is actually a massive operation that keeps me off the doorstep. So
Yeah,
I've still got.
ironically enough, yes.
Yeah, and there's still casework, no, the normal casework coming in, which I'm still dealing with. There was a, yeah, a well, the national press have been a bit interesting. I've done a few interviews with various national and London media about it because, understandably, they're interested in it. But actually, yeah, for the last couple of days, I've been in the Isle of Wight doing some.
I was going to ask you about that.
It's doing some change of control work with their. So they're another very interesting one. They've got 39 councillors. 19 of them are reformed now, of whom only one has been re-elected. So they've got 18 new reform councillors, and then 11 independents. But they're not a completely united group. Nine of them, I guess you probably could say, are four Lib Dems, one Labour, two Tories. The Tories used to run the Isle of Wight very recently. And whatever the difference is, one green, I think it is, or maybe two greens. So, yeah, I mean, if you think Wandsworth politics was a bit complicated, it's got nothing on many of these places where the politics is very fragmentary. So I did a session a couple of months ago with them on member officer relations. And then yesterday went down and had a, or day before yesterday, had a session in the morning again on member officer relations. And then a Q&A session with all councillors, mainly the new ones, in the afternoon. And one of the things I've always been a bit critical of Wandsworth of under both administrations is that we've not been terribly good at making use of the peer resource that's available through the local government association. And I don't know how you feel that, Leonie, but it seems to me that our induction for new councillors, it's all an officer's view of what being a member is like. And it's all about what the departments do, rather than the very interesting. Rather than having some actually elected members coming in and saying, "This is why the job is peculiar." In particular, how councillors have to balance somehow being responsible to their ward because they're the people who've directly elected them and can directly unelect them next time. But you're also a strategic member of the. You're in effect a non-executive director of the authority as a whole. So in that sense, the 58 of you in Wandsworth's case are a team and you're all on the same side trying to run the authority as a whole. And so Leonie may be elected for Thursday and I'm elected for West Hill, but both of us have a responsibility to the people of, say, St Mary's or Battersea Park, because we are members of the authority that looks after the whole borough. And then, of course, for many people, they've also got a responsibility to the party as well. And balancing those three responsibilities so that you give proper service to each of them, even when they're in conflict, is it's not something that the officers ever have to go through. They're basically responsible to their line manager and at the top level to the cabinet. But there's not that sort of depth of complication about who you're responsible to. And I've for a long time thought that we ought to just have a session in the induction, like I did in the Isle of Wight a couple of days ago, just having a counsellor from somewhere outside saying, "These are things that you'll probably come across, and don't worry, people have been there before."
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I actually wrote a training course which I used to deliver for the Labour Party, and I also did it as a sort of modular thing. And I wrote it in such a way that actually other people I used to I've been trained to deliver training, so I also wrote it so that other people could deliver it as well. And one of the parts of it was after we'd done a lot of other things, was to get everybody in the afternoon session, because it was basically got people to do a whole day of trying to prepare for if they were thinking about standing to be a councillor, these were some of the things that would be part of their responsibilities. And then did an extended role play where everybody was given different pieces of paper and they played different roles. And then they had to go into a Labour group meetings. Obviously, this was a training for the Labour Party, and they dealt with some of those conflicts that will arise in a Labour group. So some of them were, you know, from different wards. Some of them were in favour of something because it was going to bring jobs. Others were against it because it was going to be developed in their ward. I mean, it was slightly imaginary because it didn't quite align with the
it's
way that...
It's like Wimbledon Park in a sense, isn't it? There's the Wimbledon Park, the park, yeah.
It wasn't quite how... planning would work because and then the people who were on the planning committee couldn't say very much because obviously and they shouldn't really have been in the room, frankly, you know, when all these kind of discussions were taking place. So and then let the whole thing play out, and other people, you know, one was meant to be the group chair and someone else was the leader, and of course, you know, actually some of what they were doing was a bit improper because it would have been trying to influence the members of the planning committee in real life. They would have had to have left that meeting.
You can see that scenario for what it is and show why it's wrong.
It then allowed you to go into, well, why would it be improper for people who are going to be subsequently making a decision who need to not be prejudged? Why would they have to not be in this meeting in real life once all the discussion had taken place? So it was quite a layered way of getting people into that full understanding of I'm here to represent my ward. Well, these people over here are representing their ward, but we're all in the same meeting and sort of on the same team. Oh, and there's some other people who are now on a committee and they have to have a different view because they're members of that specific committee. It worked quite well, actually, as a getting people into that headspace of what they need to do when they're a councillor. But yeah, I do agree, Malcolm. We've never had that. And in fact, the session I attended on Monday, which, to sign in and whatnot, and then went and sat in the council chamber and was exactly that. It was, these are the departments, these are the structures of staff. Here are some people from the staff who are going to tell you a couple of things. I don't think anybody asked any questions this time. So it was all over very quickly. I think there's some more sessions that are taking place, though, which I'm not sure I'm going to go to any more of them. So I have been a councillor now.
It'd be superfluous, really, wouldn't it? Yes, but at the same time, the wisdom in the room, it's a common theme in modern life, isn't it? I think sometimes, particularly in later life, people feel a little bit sidelined. And it's very much to the cost sometimes of the institutions that... That brush this stuff aside. But a particular relevance here, I'm wondering, Mal, obviously you are going to reform council in the Isle of Wight as it now is, whether you would be happy to make this informational methodology available for other parties pursuant to the general democratic tilt. The reason I ask that, and I'd like to bring Graham back in now, is that we have these new uncertain potentially faltering administrations, for example, in Lambeth and Southwark and various other places across the land where people are new to this and they are inheriting a former incumbent political structure that was sort of, how could I put it, megalithic, really. It was epic, and it's, as was previously the case, it was with the Tories. You know, it's a hard act to follow unless you know exactly what you're doing and you've got the measure of things. Micromanagement, yes, perhaps, thinking of the Greens and Cressingham, for example, in Brixton, and the inroads they made there because of some situations that arose. But the bigger picture on a fairly grand scale, these immense areas of London needing a new approach to governance, but a new approach that is having to figure it out on the fly. Graham, what do you make of the sound of what Leonie and Mal have been describing here in terms of the training available and the prospects for these new administrations?
Well, this was going to be very interesting to see how the reform candidates actually perform, whether they can actually do the job, whether they can be trained up, because a lot of them come from outside politics, as I understand.
Allegedly outside the stratosphere.
Yeah.
If indeed they actually exist.
They're a different group altogether. And I think that's part of the reason they'll be... antagonistic towards their fellows.
There have been a crime. One doesn't wish to stereotype them, but there have been resignations and abstention. Well, abstentions, just disappearances, indeed non-appearances, haven't there, elsewhere. Not so much in London.
Yeah, the one thing I was wondering about Richmond or being all Liberal Democrat, whether that has anything to do with David Attenborough living there.
No.
You
No.
don't think?
No.
It's a different form of growth he's dealing with there, isn't it? But anyway, as we were
But I
saying
think
last week,
the
again,
main,
happy
because
centenary, Sir David.
the way reform aren't going to get in is if they mess up. They've got a long time to mess up, and people to get disillusioned with them, which is what usually happens. I remember that. That's what happened with the National Front when they started getting into power.
It's a sort of enough rope principle, really, isn't it? Of these things getting their head in so often, and they build them up, and they knock them down, sort of thing.
Also, the
But it's what they're doing to
Greens.
themselves.
Also, the Greens, I think, are going to now. The spotlight is going to fall on them far more intensively. I don't know whether Malcolm has clocked what's gone on in Hackney, but I think everyone knows that the Greens won the Hackney
Probably has.
mayor. Greens won the Hackney mayor. They also won the Lewisham mayor. These are two of the directly elected mayors that are elected in London. And the newly minted mayor of Hackney until last Monday was also a London Assembly member. So was sitting next to this bloke called Zach Polanski in the chamber with me in the London Assembly. And she has appointed, in her wisdom, actually, it'd be quite interesting to hear Malcolm's opinion on this. Have you seen it? She's got a bloke called Dylan Law, has now become the portfolio holder for housing, the cabinet member for housing, and is also her deputy. She's able to appoint a deputy mayor. And he was elected last week for the first time as a new councillor. And guess how old he is?
Sorry.
20.
All right, so
A 20-year-old councillor elected on the 7th of May is now the cabinet member for housing and the deputy mayor of Hackney.
new
What
mayor
could
of Worcester is 24, I think.
possibly go wrong?
And you think of the public housing in Hackney. I used to do what's called floating support around there, and
There's a
my
lot
God,
of
it's
it.
in a bit of a state, isn't it? It really is.
Well, I worked in Hackney for a while on
Yes,
asset
as a
management.
housing specialist in your time as
As a
well,
housing specialist, yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of stock in Hackney.
Like an
It's
immense Roman ruin, really, isn't it?
no, they have, they did get some money through the Decent Homes program, so
Yes,
they have
valiant
improved.
efforts have been made and will continue to be made, I'm sure.
Yes, but I mean, it's they've got almost as much stock as Wandsworth. The one thing they will probably actually no, it probably is about 30,000 units, so it's literally almost the same as Wandsworth. The difference is they don't have 50-50 tenants and leaseholders, whereas in Wandsworth it's got about 50-50 now, leaseholders and tenants. In Hackney, I think it's probably only about 5,000, maybe 6,000 leaseholders.
But it's an interesting point you're making earlier. Malon, what you as Leone was suggesting we ask is of people of the lower cut in age for people getting into local government. As I say, we have a 24-year-old mayor in Worcester now, I think, female, which is wonderful. Also a musician, wonderful. But again, Dylan in Hackney, what are his prospects for getting the sort of the bigger picture 2020? You mentored Ayden Dickerdin, I think, didn't you, a little while ago? Who is somewhere in the mix in Wandsworth or elsewhere now?
I like Ayden. We do have coming, he comes from a very different political tradition from me, which is good. I had a chat with him on Monday at the chat, because one of the horrible things I've just been in the position of is meaning that a lot of sort of good, dedicated people are from the Labour cabinet. I've had to decide that they lose their jobs and in some cases a significant part of their livelihood, which is
Yes.
a horrible position to have to
And the
be
body
in.
of work that they've achieved.
Yeah, and it's unavoidable. And to be fair, yeah, I mean, chase to them, they've all been very phlegmatic about it, and and not held it personally against me, which is nice of him. But it's
Right.
a bit of a strain. But yes, there is a real issue. I mean, the fact of the matter is that most people who are elected for reform are just as sensible and community-minded as everybody else. What we're hearing now from both Reform and the Greens is the hard edge, which all parties have had, and the Labour, Tory, Lib Dems have had many, many years gradually to filter out the worst of their candidates. But it still happens. You still get the most peculiar people getting into
You're right.
positions.
This is not unique to reforms, a
No,
phenomena.
no. I mean, in one case, one of them became ambassador to the US. It's an extraordinary position. But for one of the very well-established parties, and how on earth they that managed to get through the netting, I've no idea. But
Eyes on the prize,
it's a complete mystery.
But at the other way, the reform lot were the ones I talked to, really concerned. They're interested that all of their councillors are now in single member wards. With the this is the first election under the new system on the Isle of Wight, which is a different dynamic from the position we've got, where Leonie and I both have two ward colleagues. Each of them are the council focus for their area, and in the session being done, you couldn't have told from the discussions that were going on, the question being asked, which group any of them belong to. And of course, I didn't know which group any of the councillors belong to, because I mean that they're new and I don't live there. So this process will be a matter of weeding out the reform people who either didn't know what they were getting into or have said very unpleasant things in the past. And Greens, there's quite a lot of them now who I suspect will be expelled because of the extreme anti-Semitism. It's sort of the Green Party, unfortunately, has become a bit of a repository for all the ones who were kicked out of Labour under the anti-Semitism purge that Starmer very effectively has carried out for Labour.
But it will soon become apparent if they're one hit wonders, so to speak, and whether
We
they're actually
shouldn't
there with
imagine. We
a
shouldn't
sincere
imagine.
aim.
We shouldn't imagine that the extreme ones that we hear about are typical of all of the people in that party have been elected.
Quite.
And reform will both have to, if they're going to be, major parties in the long term, then they will ultimately have to manage some of the tensions between those who are more ideological and those who are more practical. All parties have to do that. And it will take time, just as it took time for all of the major parties as they were getting going on that. But I think at this stage, I'd be loath to write off the whole of these newly emerging political parties on the basis that they've got some serious wrong-uns. And in fact, it's how they deal with the wrong-uns that'll set the tone, I think, rather than just the fact that they're there.
I don't think it's just the wrong-uns, though, and the reason why I'm concerned at what Zoe, who holds all the cards in Hackney, because she's the directly elected mayor, so she gets to appoint absolutely everybody pretty much to everything. And they've also now got quite a majority on of the councillors as well. But I think to choose an absolutely brand new councillor who doesn't come with a background of work in anything at all in particular, because they're only 20, so that's impossible. I mean, unless they left school at 16 and have spent 4 years working
Or
at
had a lot of
something.
lived experience at the sharp
But
end, so to speak.
their lived experience must necessarily be, fairly limited. Their councillor experience is about a day, or probably they've just
Well, it
signed.
could have been a day of your training, Leonie, you see, in a parallel universe, which would transform
Well,
everything.
it could have been, but I don't think it
Yeah,
was.
almost.
Has now been selected to run one of the most difficult portfolios in Hackney.
Oh, no
And
pressure.
I'm not sure that I think that that is a wise choice. Zoe has also retained for herself the community safety portfolio, and she's very strongly anti-police. She blocked as a as an assembly member. She was sitting on the Police and Crime Committee, and the chair of the Police and Crime Committee wanted to write to the police and say thank you for your work in Golders Green, apprehending those two, the individuals who were, the guy who was stabbing people in the street,
Yeah, fifth columnist
and
otherwise, yeah.
she refused to sign off the letter, despite the fact that all the other groups on that committee, the letters are signed off by the party group lead representative, and as she was the only Green on the Police and Crime Committee last year, she was the party group lead, and she refused to sign off to
Yeah.
thank the police for doing their duty, and she's on the record as supporting the legalisation of drugs and the legalisation of prostitution. So I think we've got some very interesting. I mean, she was all the time asking aggressive questions about the appalling nature of live facial recognition, the appalling nature of stop and search. I mean, I think she'd quite like to stop and search altogether. Definitely
It's a big
against
thing
you.
here in Croydon now.
So,
Yeah.
she's she's now holding the community safety brief. How will the police in Hackney feel about dealing with the new Hackney mayor who holds these views? I mean,
Well, I'm gonna,
I
yeah,
think
I
that's
mean,
actually, I think that's quite extreme the way the Greens have
yeah.
been so anti-police, and I find it quite disturbing that she now holds that position. I'm not sure what Malcolm would feel about that either.
Can I
Or
just
Graham.
interject on that to Mal, please respond, but I wanted to just tilt us a little bit towards the King's Speech and the Streeting Challenge. But ahead of that, we have Rowley's comments about
Zach.
indeed Zac and the invitation to withdraw those. So that in the sense, the police becoming politicised sort of plays into that potential brouhaha, doesn't it?
Well, it's not the police becoming politicised, it's the Greens who have wanted to win votes. And so they have been taking a particular anti-police attitude and pro-drugs and pro-prostitution. This whole sort of, I mean, they've been showing a lot of ankle to a set of voters who are that sort of younger, showing a lot of ankle. You enjoyed that. Now, Mrs. Trellis. They have wanted to attract the votes of lots of people in their 20s and 30s. And that's also why they've put up with the anti-Semitism. And some would even say there are people in the Green Party who, well, in fact, we know that some of them are definitely anti-Semitic because two were arrested in Lambeth for making the most appalling statements. I mean,
One of whom has been elected nonetheless.
one of whom is in the ward right next to mine, over the borough boundary from Wandsworth into Lambeth, and said the most hideous things and was arrested for it quite properly. But they've also been wanting to get the votes of Muslims. This was their strategy in Gorton and Denton, and they wanted the votes of university students and Muslims and more white and in a bit more widely the whole demographic
Well,
of people in their 20s and 30s. And it's been
someone
a very
argued, yeah,
very
a little bit
successful
disenfranchised at
strategy.
the moment, potentially.
Very successful strategy. It may even have increased turnout in some areas, getting younger people to vote. But I think it's very concerning that they are, I wouldn't quite say willing to do or say anything to get votes, but I mean, and a very different strategy to the reform strategy, where you could also say they are almost willing to do or say anything to get votes, but at the other end of the spectrum, people are quite clearly voting for reform, because they have said things on the immigration piece, and about sending people home and chucking people out. So I do think this sort of populist saying things that you think will get you votes, sort of almost regardless of, the overall consequences, is not a good place for us to be in our politics.
And it's in a sense, I hear you. This is where people will fall down because they don't really have anything to do for an encore, so to speak. The arguments haven't been thought through, and there isn't the basis for a rigorous and how could I put it, graciously toned debate.
Well, gracious.
Goodness gracious me.
The nature of our politics on the first past the post is that the parties are coalitions, And so coalition building,
Just
which
Labour's quite
happens
about Labour,
in
wasn't it?
society, happens within the parties between elections rather than across parties after the elections. And the Greens have a real issue. There's a lot, you see quite a lot on X and on, and I've talked to a couple of the old Greens, if I can put it that way, who were, you know, the
Sort of
environment
kale
was
tendency, the kale smoothie.
well, whatever. We don't need to be sort of particularly, you know, negative about it. But they,
Not at all. Very partial one.
you know, the fact that the winner at the Manchester by-election didn't mention the environment in her acceptance speech is something which is, you know, and yeah, you know, how do you manage the that side of the Greens, which has become very passionate, you know, advocates for trans women, with, for example, and for gay votes, with the Islamist side of the Greens, where of course that's deeply inimical to their religion and to their philosophy, and managing a tension as deep as that is going to be a real issue for the Greens over time. Now they may be able to get there. We did listenings at the local synagogue before the election, and the first thing that the Green candidate said, to his credit, was that he wanted to dissociate himself from the many anti-Semitic comments that have been made by Green candidates across the country. And I don't think he was saying that simply because where we were. He looked genuinely uncomfortable about sitting in the same party as some people that make the most dreadful racist
The heat of
attacks
the
on.
moment. And again, talking of the heat of the moment, if I could cut across the potential succession to Starmer. What do we make of what Wes Streeting is up to right now? He disappeared in a huff, didn't he, after his 10 minutes with Starmer, who sort of bolted the door for any communication that was not one-on-one. The timing around the King's speech as well, which has had a, shall we say, a mixed reception and was delivered with typical inland, very unusual circumstances.
In 1995, was it, John Redwood challenged John Major
Oh, yes.
to the Conservative leadership, and Michael Portillo, who was the, in many ways, the you know, a much more Redwood's an extremely bright man, but I don't think he really ever had the kind of
So,
charisma
someone at the
that
bike
would.
of Genghis Khan, but very bright with it, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Portillo had to be. The charisma, I think, and he's made a very successful career as a in the media after leaving politics. But he bottled it. You know, he had a room where apparently all of the phones were installed to start ringing around
That's chambers
people,
late, presumably,
and he backed out of it at the last minute. And I don't think he ever recovered from that. And that's what really came into mind seeing Streeting yesterday. I don't think Streeting's got the numbers, from what I understand, to actually make a direct challenge. But he's sort of. I think it looks like he sort of you know, marched up to the top of the hill and then just marched down again, and I think that's going to have fatally damaged him. I think as a serious candidate, Angela Rayner, fine, she's not been you know
Newly
prosecuted, so
exonerated from the financial
well she's still
brouhaha,
exonerated, but she still had to pay £4,000 that she didn't
No,
pay and.
40.
Yes.
Forty,
Yes.
sorry,
Like he
forty.
sank in his houseboat.
Sorry, 40,000.
Yeah,
Oh,
and
Zach doesn't pay council tax. We discovered. No, he doesn't have
well,
to bother
no,
with
it's
that.
thought not. I used to
Okay.
have a houseboat, and it's the Canal and Rivers Authority
It's
who
not a
pay.
good sign when you are housing minister and you don't
No.
understand the amount of money you should be paying. And Starmer, well, you know, they found another seat for him to have a go at. The last one,
Burnham.
the Labour
Burnham.
Party at Burnham, sorry, the last the Labour
He's
Party at
proud for
Stoney.
good for his own name after all this, hasn't he? And indeed, yes.
So, you know, whether he would win a by-election in a seat which voted more than 50% reform in the council elections last week, and just what a nightmare that would be. Burnham goes forward, he doesn't win the seat. Starmer inevitably gets blamed to a considerable extent for that happening. They then
As he
lose
is
the
everything
call.
else,
They
yeah.
then lose the Greater Manchester mayoralty as well, because the reform really you know, came very close to sweeping the board in Manchester in the local elections
My
last
God, they
week.
did, didn't they?
You can just imagine this whole thing ending up much worse than we're at the moment. My instincts are that Starmer will survive, simply because any of the other alternatives look even less likely than him staying in power. And we should remember, there was a much bigger revolt against Corbyn, and he survived as leader for some
But is
time
he sort of
afterwards.
fatally wounded a little bit in sort of a little bit in lame duckery terms, Graham? What do you I mean, we were talking in your absence, lady and gentlemen, last week about Starmer's potential position, and this has duly come to pass. What do you make of where he's at now, and indeed the two other challenges potentially? Three.
Yeah, well, I can see him surviving. I think Streeton made a mistake. He played it very badly, and I think if Andy Burnham wins, then he's got a very good chance because I think people just want a northerner rather than a Londoner.
And parts of the political agenda that feel a little bit neglected by the diehards,
Yeah,
perhaps.
I think. But I think they've done it very badly. I think that's why where Streeting made a lot of mistakes. He shouldn't have acted yesterday.
Leonie, surveying the events of last week, given your immense competence and temporisation of so many situations, what do you think the optics are?
What if you're not a politician and you're an
Yeah, I guess,
ordinary?
yes, yeah, but you voted Labour optimistically last time round.
Well, I think the optics have been bad for Keir for a long time, bringing it back to Kieran. I mean, let's face it, all of this discussion is because Keir has behaved in a certain way. And for Labour people, 3 weeks after the election in July 2024, when everyone was still on a high about having won, the amazing number of candidates, and the King's speech, and then there was.
The exhale after 14 years of something different.
And standing on a platform that said change. And then there were a couple of things that
Hope.
happened. Firstly, they suddenly announced this thing about virtually scrapping winter fuel allowance for everybody, which was a massive mistake. It hadn't been in the manifesto. It's completely, I mean, it took it away from too
The
many
Mrs. Truss
people.
needs bill, as it was nearly called, yeah.
I think where they've got to now on winter fuel allowance, and so the people who really have got serious amounts of money who really don't need it don't get it anymore, but everyone else does, is what they should have announced then. They should have means tested it, or they should have just said anyone who pays tax in the upper tax band won't get it anymore. I mean, it would have been really easy to do, but to do what they did and scrap it was awful, and it just looked as though they were picking on pensioners. And then round about that same time, and it's not as though it's new, the papers, the media picking on Labour when in office, round about the same time as they were picking on pensioners, it suddenly emerged that Keir had accepted free glasses and free clothes, and so had Rachel, and Angela had borrowed somebody's flat for free in New York. And it suddenly made them look not, when it's
A
a
little
Tory,
bit shabby, perhaps.
well, it just looked, well, I'm going to accept a bunch of freebies, and at the same time I'm going to stamp on pensioners, which is the juxtaposition was just awful. Now everybody expects the Tories to accept freebies. It was priced in, as they say, that Boris Johnson was was
As the bon
unfaithful.
viveur,
Well, unfaithful to his many wives and mistresses, that he behaved extremely badly. So
And
it
needing publicly subsidized premises for the
I mean,
unfaithful.
he had to behave so badly during COVID that everybody then kind of revolted against what he was doing and became repulsed. But he had to behave unbelievably badly. Whereas because Keir had just stood on a everywhere for 6 months waving a placard that said change, suddenly it turned out there was no change.
It's proportionality, isn't it, in context here?
So just even a sort of misdemeanor that wasn't anywhere on the same scale as Nigel Farage accepting 5 million and forgetting to telling anyone about it.
Yes.
The
That
difference
has been
is,
reported, and the due process will take place to whatever effect.
but to misunderstand the level of expectation that lies on a Labour politician's shoulders as being completely different from the level of expectation that lies on a Conservative or Reform, and to behave like that, and also to stamp on pensioners, and also not to lift the two-child benefit cap, which, if you remember, was not in the Labour immediate plans, and a motion was put down by another party in Parliament. And there were quite a few Labour MPs who then voted for it, and they were promptly all suspended. So there was an attack on the left, and also, you know, the left in the party were being attacked. It turned out that there was no change because he was prepared to take freebies, and he was also prepared to attack pensioners. And I think from that moment onwards, that has created a cognitive dissonance between what people wanted him to be when they voted for him with change on the menu, and what has turned out to be actually the Starmer premiership. And that was then compounded by, you know, you cannot appoint someone called the Prince of Darkness to a role as an ambassador and not...
They go back a long way, it seems, don't they? Quite a long way.
You know, I'm sorry, it was a huge mistake. Absolutely huge. They should have left Karen Pearce in place as the ambassador in the US. She by all accounts had a good relationship with everybody, including Trump. And so that mistake, on top of those very early mistakes, has been absolutely shocking. And if I put stuff on social media now, some people will troll me and say, you're from the party that is the friend of paedophiles. I mean, that's the kind of trolling that we're all getting now as Labour politicians. I am being accused of being a friend of paedophiles because of what Keir Starmer did in relation to Mandelson. Now,
it's the curse of not very bright people, isn't it? And the fact that this can be, well, very upsetting, but, you know, it is.
He's done all of that. So therefore, as a result, about half the PLP are... Parliamentary Labour Party are pretty cross with him. And then about half of that number have now gone public saying how cross they are. Then there's another set of people who, come what may, even though he's done all these ridiculous things and has damaged his own brand really badly and damaged the Labour brand really badly. There's another about 100 of them who've gone public saying, no, we've got to keep him, to keep him.
It then sort of mirrors Trump's situation at the moment in the perpetual bunker, doesn't it?
And then there are 200 who've said nothing. Now, I've spoken to people in all three of those categories. And the problem is that, you know, how do we move on from having Keir as the premier, when, which we clearly need to do, because he's damaged his own brand, but he's also damaging the Labour brand. How you move on is unbelievably difficult in Labour, unlike the Tories, where, you know, you send all these letters to the 1922 committee and then, you know, you can have a challenge. It's much more difficult to do that in Labour. And so in one sense, what Wes has done is very brave, because he has fired the starting pistol on moving things forward. He's also said, I don't think it should move forward really, really quickly, because he knows that that would favour him, because Angela Rayner needed to sort herself out, which she now has, but also bringing Andy Burnham into the mix, which is, as Malcolm has just said, it's going to be a high-risk route to getting back in. Look, if Burnham can win the by-election against Reform and come back into the House and then has to stand down as the Mayor of Manchester and so on and so forth, if he can get back into the House, he will have beaten Reform to get there. So I think there'll then be a very strong chance that he would beat Wes and beat Keir. But, I mean, there's a lot of big ifs there. And, at least, you know, it's a very, very swift moving picture, because, you know, Angela only announced at 6 o'clock yesterday morning that her tax affairs were settled. Wes resigned as health minister at 1 o'clock. And then Josh Simons resigned his seat in Makerfield, or said he was going to. He probably hasn't quite done it yet.
Gone that's Lancashire, isn't it? Ashton and Makerfield?
Makerfield is in Greater Manchester.
So very handy for the beach then.
It's right next to where Andy Burnham lives. You know, it can hardly be more local. So all of that happened yesterday, 6 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and then I think Josh Simons made his announcement about his intentions about 5:30. So I don't know what's going to emerge today, let alone next week. But I think Starmer stays is definitely numbered. I think we can all agree on that. Who will replace him at this point in time is anybody's guess.
Yeah, and yet, gentlemen, you think that he may well limp on, at least for the time being, and possibly survive this leadership challenge as the least worst option? Yeah.
There is a timing. I mean, firstly, just in the back of my mind, you can't resign as a Member of Parliament. You have to apply for...
Children's Hundreds, right?
Or the Manor of Northstead. You can apply for the Manor of Northstead. And there's one possibility is that they will not be appointed to that position, because you can't, like with any job you apply for, you can't say, right, I'm going to have that job, stuff it. It has to be decided through the political process. And part of me just wonders, what if they say, no, we're not giving you that job? Then he has to remain as a Member of Parliament. I can't imagine really that'll happen. But it just says just how complex the whole situation is. But then you've got, we've been marking this week the 30th anniversary of the death of John Smith, who was the Labour leader. and they've been showing that one of the best, funniest parliamentary speeches I've ever seen was the one when he was talking about they didn't use the word omni-shambles because it hadn't been invented at that stage, but the issues that the major government
that found its time. About.
And he came up with one wonderful line about all of this. He said, if we went to the BBC's entertainment department and suggested this as a plot for Yes Minister, we think it would be turned down as being too incredible. And then he said, I don't think they've even accepted that some mothers do have them. And then he went on, and because people won't remember this, but the Holbeck Hall Hotel was one of the places that we who were at Scarborough College used to sneak off to occasionally at lunchtime for an illegal pint. And that part of the coast was always very unstable. And in the mid-90s...
Even after a few pints, no doubt, yes.
In the mid-90s, it slipped, and we lost all of that, and the Holbeck Hall over a number of days.
Oh, no.
It seemed bit by bit falling into the sea. And there'd been a problem with a protest at the Grand National that year as well. Smith saying and timely, brilliantly saying, no wonder we live in a country where the Grand National doesn't start, everyone laughs, so he plays that laugh, and where hotels fall into the sea. And and that was what really damaged Major. If you look back, particularly in terms of economic performance by Ken Clark and John Major, it was actually the British economy was actually pretty well managed by that. But because it was tainted by this string of mismanaged issues that Smith referred to in his speech, they never recovered that sense of credibility. And I can't see under any circumstances how Starmer, however well forward now, is going to regain a sense of credibility that he had when he was elected.
His
main saving grace is that there is, at the moment, no very obvious way of getting to an alternative, and indeed no very obvious person who you want, because if it is to be Burnham, and I think Burnham is the most likely candidate from a public point of view, then there are many, many steps still necessary before you could even get to a point where that would happen. But it is going to be interesting. Do people make a field, in effect, are going to be electing a prime minister or deciding whether to elect a prime minister or not.
And it's a bit like the people of West Hill electing
the councillor. Making a whole mess.
Who's deciding who runs Wandsworth Council for the next 4 years. And I'm still looking for that seat in your cabinet, Malcolm.
You might have a wait.
Well, due process, but we await developments with interest. Thank you all very much. See you next time. Cheers. And congratulations, both. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.